This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandhu and it is a Tuesday today. However, it is a day where I will bring in Matt Armitage because we have no Friday show. Friday is New Year's Day, so you know there's no point both of us coming into the studio.
I've never done a Tuesday before. Yeah? This is really exciting for me. I feel like I'm embracing the midweek. I've been promoted to the limelight.
Yeah.
One of the good days instead of just shoved at the end of the week where nobody cares.
Now, the reason why we're doing this and we decided to still have a show, even though Friday is New Year's Day and it's a public holiday, is because we are going to look back at the year of the good things. You know, a lot of people were complaining about, you know, we were so negative at the last show, talking about, you know,
hey,
the
I was
failures.
Born to be negative. I have that tattooed on various parts of my body.
He does. He actually does. So, good stuff of 2015. Matt, what do you have?
Okay, I'm going to
nothing.
Start.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely nothing. Yeah, I'm going home now. No, I'm going to start with the Tesla Energy Powerwall. Now, we've mentioned this on the show a few times this year. I'm not really sure that we've managed to get its true importance over, or at least the importance for me. Just for those people who don't know, what is the Tesla
Powerwall.
Energy Powerwall? It's a $3,500 lithium ion battery that allows you to store electricity from either from the grid or from renewable resources like solar panels. You can put up to 9 of these batteries. You can link them together depending on how much power your home needs. And you can effectively become independent from the electricity grid. So this is Elon Musk, who's the big boss of Tesla Energy. He thinks that that this really is going to be the future of electricity generation. Of course he does, because he wants to sell it to you. But
he's going to rule the entire universe.
Exactly. But this is using the same technology that powers his cars. So it's, you know, it's part of the same equation. And why is this so important? I mean, when you think about things like the fossil fuels that we use, like oil and gas and coal, one of the things they have in common is that they're actually quite easy to store. And also when you look at nuclear power station, they have that appeal of being, you know, always on. It's always kind of glowing away in the background. But the problems start when you use any of these fuels to generate electricity. Electricity is very, very difficult to store, and that makes it very inefficient. You know, once you make it, you have to use it, or it just kind of dissolves. I don't actually know where electricity goes. That's probably a That's a good shot to go.
Where does electricity go?
Anyway, digressing, you know, it makes managing a power grid and power capacity very, very expensive. One of the advantages that fossil fuels and nuclear energy do have is that it makes you free to ramp up your production of electricity according to demand. You can ramp up, you can ramp down. When we start looking at things like renewables, the problems are quite large. You know, for example, you tend to need the aircon when the wind isn't blowing. So, you know, you can't get your aircon from wind when you need it. Similarly, if you want to take a shower while it's raining, solar energy is not going to do you a lot of good. But when you look at what we do with these things, at home, we store our hot and cold water in tanks. You don't just buy enough rice for one meal, as a rule, or you don't put just enough petrol to get you to work so that you've got to go and fill up immediately.
Well, some people do that.
I mean, some people do, but I mean, you know, but this is basically what we're doing with electricity. Because, you know, you just get used to the fact that you turn the switch and the electricity is there, but it's actually being generated on demand for you. Batteries allow us to kind of balance that out a little bit. We can generate most of all of our power needs at home with these renewables and then store the energy in the batteries. So, you know, it's that case of, you know, making hay while the sun shines. When the sun's shining, we make the electricity. When it isn't shining, it's there for later on. Elon Musk thinks that 900 million of these batteries would be enough to get the world off carbon power plants. Now, I know that sounds like an awful lot, But there are currently 2 billion cars on the surface of the planet. Again, this is probably not going to be enough in and of itself, but I think it's certainly going to be part of the energy solution while we're still looking for ways to make, you know, renewable energy sources generate more power and to become much more efficient.
Yeah, I actually really like the Powerwall idea because I actually do see, you know, houses in the future having these devices. It may not be the sole electricity provider.
No.
But it will be.
But it will be a very important part.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think Elon Musk is up to something.
And also I think it will allow communities to become a lot more self-contained and self-sustaining.
Yeah. Exactly, especially when you come to think of, you know, clubhouses and, you know, the top of my mind is clubhouses, you know, because how often do, you know, these clubhouses need to, you know, be continuously running 24 hours and, you know, the electricity
you don't.
Is being
wasted.
And
then when you look at the technologies like Philips has come up with the smart lighting solutions that can even adapt the climate control systems of buildings according to where people are within the building. So it's smart business, smart building management linked to lighting.
Yeah.
So there's an awful lot of things, and all of these things are going to come together, I think, to make the kind of buildings and communities of the future much more efficient.
All right. Now, my pick is Oculus Rift.
We don't care about your pick. Today is about me. It's a Tuesday and I'm on air.
But it is about the good things, Matt. It is not something that you love to preach on air.
This is not what I was told. I'm here under false pretenses.
Now, earlier in July, I attended the Shanghai Mobile World Congress. And if there was one thing that I could take away was my very short experience with the Oculus Rift. Now, for those who are living in a cave, and I'm not sure how you're listening to this show, if you're still living in the cave, maybe there's some high-tech radio system that we don't know.
It's coming down a fissure in the rock, so it's just like amplifying out.
So the Oculus Rift is probably the most advanced virtual reality headset. Fun fact, it actually started out as a Kickstarter project that we smashed and bashed the previous show. And then it later on got sold to Facebook for $2 billion.
Not bad for a Kickstarter project bashed.
Yeah, not bad for a Kickstarter project. And it's actually just spare change for, you know, Mark Zuckerberg or, you know, Zucky. We call him Zucky.
Yeah,
like close buddies and
Zucky
all, right?
Boy.
Now, this year, there's been a whole lot of advancements in VR tech. So much so that we've seen more than 4 players just sprung up and they are shouting VR as well. And everyone is gearing up to a 2016 launch. Now, back to my experience with the Oculus Rift. It was a 5-minute video presentation of how 5G networks can change the entire networking infrastructure in a city. And this was done using the Oculus. So you sit on a chair, you wear the headphones, you wear the Oculus Rift. And this video is just probably the most immersive video experience I've ever had. The whole video is talking about how a city would change with 5G networks. So instead of just having one field of view, you could look around and see buildings being interacted as well, cars moving around. And for me, I just felt like, wow, I always thought that, you know, virtual reality a few years back, that it would be great for gaming, but at the moment, you know, they are taking it beyond gaming, and we've spoken about it before.
Yeah, we've talked about it before. I mean, the potential for virtual reality and architecture is absolutely
crazy,
astonishing, because the architects can literally walk around inside their building and get the experience of the building. Because, you know, we've had all kinds of things where flagship buildings have gone up and you find that the surface outside actually absorbs too much light. I can't remember which building it was, but the surface of the building was so reflective that it was causing damage to
the one
buildings.
In the UK, right?
Yeah, causing damage to buildings across the street.
Yeah, castle melting.
Yeah, exactly. Dashboards of cars, that's what it was. Mm. Yes. Mm. Yeah. So these kind of things hopefully can be avoided because we will have a much more holistic experience in the design process.
Yeah.
I can't believe I just said holistic experience in the design process. Anyway, that's what you get on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday, exactly. You know, when you bring Matt on a Tuesday, he's just, you know, on a different level. He's just all fun and happy and, you know, cheery, talking about good stuff.
I'm going back to Fridays.
Now, healthcare and it's also one of the aspects that can benefit from VR and also engineering. We've spoken about, you know, buildings, but even cars. In early 2000 and 2015, Audi started using the Oculus Developers Kit at dealerships to help customers configure the cars that they're interested in. So you're like, you know, you could actually see what kind of leather trim you would like in the car. So, you know, they could just sit on the plastic chair but feel like, you know, they're sitting in their...
Like they're wrapped.
Yeah, and they're wrapped in their Audi and, you know, go like,
Algehide or whatever it is.
And they can also then, you know, experience what it is like to be in a race car, you know, for those who want to feel like that. So in 2016, you would see not just the Oculus Rift, you will see a whole lot of other players coming in and launching the virtual reality headsets. And I'm excited about that. I'm sure Matt is excited about it.
Matt's probably less excited because he's got a feeling that his eyes aren't going to allow virtual reality to work very well for him.
Age.
But anyway.
Age. Anyways, we will be right back in just a moment and we will continue of our special, the good stuff of 2015, BFM 89.9. This is Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandu and I'm here with Matt Armitage from culturepop.com. No, it is not a Friday. It's a Tuesday. I know it's a Tuesday and I'm bringing Matt on for this very special show and under false pretenses, of course. Because he's now have to talk about the good stuff of 2015. So Matt, early on you spoke about Elon Musk and his Powerwall, and then I spoke about Oculus Rift. What do you have next?
I have got space.
Oh, right.
Well, we can't have a best of without me going to space. I mean, I know space isn't interesting anymore to most people, but
you're a frequent traveler.
I am. Yeah, I'm a real space case. But anyway, 2015 has actually been a really, really great year for all things space-related. We got our first proper close-up pictures of Pluto this year from the New Horizons space probe. Amazing, amazing pictures. It took 9 years for that probe to get there, and it's still journeying out into the far reaches of space. We had the Mars Curiosity rover discovering salty liquid water just below the planet's surface. And there are also indications that the water comes up to the surface sometimes. This is actually really important because we've been talking about manned missions to Mars, and one of the things we're going to need obviously is fresh water to drink, but also water is something that we can extract oxygen from, so finding liquid water, not just water at the poles, is going to be crucial for any Mars colony in the future. And of course, you know, Matt Damon also shows that you can survive on Mars if you grow potatoes out of your own poop. And it's not the only place in the solar system that's got water as well. Jupiter's moon Ganymede has a subsurface ocean. We found that out this year as well. It looks pretty likely that Saturn's moon Enceladus has water on it as well. Just sort of, we were talking about plants a second ago. Talking about that a little bit more, astronauts on the International Space Station ate vegetables grown on the spacecraft for the first time this year. Mm-hmm. Again, that's really important because giving astronauts a source of fresh food and vitamins while they're in space is a major challenge for, you know, lengthy missions and explorations. Hopefully they'll be able to grow something more interesting than romaine lettuce next time. But, you know, it's a really good first step. Mm. And probably the biggest story for space this year, we discovered our own cousin in the form of a planet called Kepler 452b.
I nearly forgot about that. Yeah.
Exactly. It's five times the size of Earth. It's 1,400 light years away, but it's probably
the closest
for human beings to go to. It probably has a much stronger gravity than we used to hear on Earth, so much so that walking around on the planet would be like having a really strenuous workout, according to a NASA.
That's very good.
But Earth plants should do okay. The intensity of the sunlight would allow things like photosynthesis to take place. The only problem is we might have left it a little bit too late to go and see if the neighbors are in. Its sun is about 1.5 billion years older than ours, and it's considerably brighter. It seems to be in a much more active stage of its lifespan. So it's quite possible that it's already started to heat the planet up and a greenhouse effect has started to take place.
Even without humans,
greenhouse effects do happen. Yeah. With us and without us. I mean, the dinosaurs caused one for reasons of major flatulence. You know, but anyway, so yeah, that heat is going to be bad for galactic penguins like myself.
All right. Now, sticking with sci-fi in a way, I'm going with AI robots. In 2015 has been the year for, you know, artificial intelligence, human-like robots especially. It's making a way into our daily lives, especially if you're in Japan. Japan has sort of taken it to a level that no other country has done it before. They are replacing human jobs with this, you know, human-like robots. For example, it's Chicha Aiko, if I'm saying it right. Chicha Hira Aiko.
I'll let you off. It's Tuesday.
It is the 21st century geisha from Japan that is designed to make conversations and entertain us humans. It's made by Toshiba, and they claim that she has the most realistic expressions of any android just yet. She can express happiness, sadness, irritation, and she can also cry. So, you know, that's sort of a leap when it comes to human-like robots, to express human-like emotions. That is the key in order to interact with a robot. They can look like humans, but sometimes the interactions just put you off.
Odd,
you know?
Yeah.
Now, at this current point of time, human-like robots still rely on a hidden camera and a human operator behind it. And however, a fully independent version is expected in 10 years' time using AI and then face and voice recognition. So these are human robots in 10 years' time, that human-like robots that will be operational on their own. They would be able to think on their own and, you know, design other human-like robots on their own as well.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what, you know, everyone has predicted will happen.
And an interesting thing as well is that there's already starting to be a human backlash for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
As part of the research for the show today, I was looking at all the stories of the year. And there's now an organization that is trying to ban sexual contact between humans and robots, because obviously, you know, one of the side effects of or side uses of developing these robots is that, you know, people are foreseeing that they may be used in the sex trade.
Yeah.
So there's already a movement coming to kind of limit the way that humans can interact with robots, he said, trying to keep it clean.
Yeah. Well, Pepper is the SoftBank robot that, you know, the SoftBank, the guys who made Pepper, you know, released a statement and saying that, you know, you cannot use this robot for any sexual activities and so forth, because,
which is,
you know,
really bizarre, because it seems made of shiny plastic.
I have no idea.
Yeah, so I'm not even going to use my imagination for that.
Anyways, but, you know, there's hotels in Japan that, you know, run solely, you know, on robots.
Inside one of the theme parks, right?
Yeah, and you know, there's also, you know, restaurants and cafes that have waitresses as, you know, as human-like robots. So you will see a lot of these things, you know, being developed even more further. But it's up to us, to humans, to see whether, you know, what is the limit? Where do we draw the line? So it's still up for discussion and debate at the moment. Anyways, Matt, what do you have next on your list?
Well, for my last story for today, I've definitely saved the best till last. I was very torn with this one. I was tempted to talk about the health risk of those skinny jeans that hipsters love. After a woman ended up in hospital this year because her jeans had actually damaged her calf muscles so badly that she collapsed. The muscles were unable to support her weight anymore because the jeans had constricted them so much. And she was in hospital for 4 days.
Wow.
It took 4 days for her muscles to recover from her tight pants. But
How is that a pick of the good stuff of 2015? We're on Tuesday,
well,
Matt.
Like I said, I have a strange way of looking at good. I mean, the good thing is that it might stop people wearing skinny jeans.
Okay, good. That's good.
But no, I've decided to go with antibiotics instead because they're a lot more interesting than fashion. And I think it's probably likely that antibiotics are more likely to save humanity than tight pants.
Yeah.
It's no secret that we're running out of useful antibiotics. The last was discovered in 1987, which is depressing for two reasons. One, that was 30 years ago, and two, I actually remember 1987. And it's a perfect storm of overprescription by doctors, misuse by food producers, wrongful use by patients, all against a backdrop of drug-resistant superbugs. So we've had hysterical media reports for the last couple of years telling us that, you know, children are going to die from grazed knees and there'll be no new drugs for decades. And one of the reasons is antibiotics are not really very profitable. So it's a good thing that a team at Northeastern University in the US has come up with a new one, which is called Taxobactin, which is hard to say, so I'm going to call it TX for the rest of today. It's important not just because it's a new strain, but it's an entirely different way of developing the drug. One of the things I didn't know, most of our antibiotics actually come from microbes found in soil. Hmm. I didn't know that, you know, they come from soil. And most of these microbes, actually as much as 99%, cannot be grown in laboratory conditions, which is why we have the problem developing new antibiotics. We've developed most of the ones we can with the 1% that will grow in the lab. But we suspect that the soil is teeming with the stuff. So the team at Northeastern Uni has grown them using an electronic chip that's actually embedded in the soil and can isolate the antibiotic bits of the bacteria. Tests have shown that the drug is effective against serious infections like C. difficile, Staph, and tuberculosis. Mm. At the moment, it's only at the make mice dance stage, so human trials should be the next step. So we're still probably about 5 years away from market. But because TX is an entirely new type of antibiotic and it has new methods of attacking infection, it's hoped that it's going to last at least 30 years before bacteria become resistant to it. And that will give us plenty of time to use these new methods to identify and develop a lot of other antibiotic strains so that, you know, in the future when your child is hit by a self-driving car, it won't die from the infection.
Talking about self-driving car, my last pick is Tesla Model S. Not just the Model S, the Model X as well, because Tesla, they made a huge leap. Tesla Motors, again, Elon Musk. You know, we started the show with Elon Musk. We're ending the show with Elon Musk as well. Tesla Motors in 2015, they made a huge leap forward because they not just launched a new car, they had a software update for the Model S that allowed its drivers to turn on the autopilot mode. And we've talked about, you know, self-driving vehicles or autonomous vehicles for a long time now, and it's finally here thanks to Tesla. They're the ones who are daring enough to push forward and, you know, let drivers try it out, compared to, you know, Volvo, BMW, Volkswagen. They're still doing this, you know, beta testing at the moment.
It's a lot of people have also commented that that's one of the problems with Tesla, in that their beta testing on
The drivers itself.
Yeah, so they're, like I said, with the antibiotics, they're currently at the make mice dance stage.
Yeah.
We are the dancing mice
Elon Musk. Yeah. So that's why a lot of people do call him the evil genius, because, you know, he seems to do things that are completely out of the ordinary. The Model S, though, like a lot of people thinking, oh, that's great, I could get a software update from a car itself just like that. But, like, you know, the Model S is not just a typical car. It has already all sort of sensors that, you know, is built in for autonomous driving or autopilot mode. So the software update just sort of tapped into the sensors for this purpose. However, it's not perfect. Elon Musk did say that it is beta, and we are the beta drivers, because there were people who posted up on YouTube of their first experiences of, you know, using the autopilot mode, and it was scary. It was very, very scary. The car started to swerve, you know, when, you know, whenever it's on the freeway or highway. And the problem is, you know, I was doing a bit of research and study on this. The problem is, it's not the software, it's the roads itself that are the issue. You know, in these sensors, you know, they scan and read the white lines that are on the road. And these white lines tend to fade, or, you know, they tend to be covered up by, you know, leaves or, you know, grass. So when the car takes off the freeway and goes on to, you know, the side skirts of the road, that's where it tends to not be able to read, and you will get, you know, your steering moving left and right immediately, very rapidly. So, you know, I think the future, you would see different types of roads that will be built.
Oh, for sure. I think we will be embedding sensors in the roads in the very near future. But that's going to lead to another problem. For example, there's always going to be, I mean, imagine like a Palmer State road in Malaysia. Mm. The highway's going to get the sensors.
Yeah.
Palmer State's not going to get the sensors. So if you've got this car and you're used to letting it drive itself, key in the thing in the sat nav. As soon as it turns off onto this road, that's it. You're plowing into a palm oil tree.
Yeah. Well, in a way, I'm giving this still, you know, brownie points because they are daring enough to push this forward. And in 2015, and we saw a lot of people, you know, saying good things about it. But you know, 2016, you will see a lot more brands, Volvo, BMW. I'm sure they will launch it. At the moment, it's all just about, you know, what happens if the car goes into an accident. That is still the biggest discussion because, you know, insurance agencies, they are saying, like, you know, driver's at fault, he can't do anything about it. You know, car manufacturers are saying, like, you know, it's not our fault, but, you know, the drivers who purchases this car saying that it's your fault because, you know, it's not in my hands. Like, yeah. I'm not driving the car. Come on.
At some point, everyone's just going to start blaming the satellites.
Anyways, this has been the good stuff of 2015. We will continue when we come back next year. So, Matt, thank you so much for doing the show
on
a Tuesday.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I'd like to wish everyone a happy new year and a happy Tuesday.
And a happy Tuesday as well. Happy new year, everybody. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.